UN-sponsored research is saying that crickets, caterpillars, and grubs are high in protein and would be a suitable source of food during droughts and other emergencies. Thanks for the free publicity, said a spokesman for Kellogg's Honey Bunches of Bugs.
Alrighty then. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil. I'm your host. I'm drinking beer, of course. We're having Chinese today. Chinese! I love Chinese food, man. I love it. I don't have it often enough. I'd like to have it more often. I don't know why I don't have it more often. It's so damn cheap. I don't know why I feel like it's such a treat when I get a chance to have it, you know? Because I'm always concerned with sodium intake and fat content and stuff, but man, sometimes you gotta throw caution in the wind and say, fuck it, we're having Chinese, you know? I want it. I've earned it. I've been good all week. Traditional Chinese food is actually far beyond what we're grown accustomed to thinking what Chinese food actually is, you know? Because we're kind of a fast food society now. And there's no doubting that, really, because we kind of are. So it only makes sense that we treat Chinese food kind of like how we treat everything else. You know, we're stuck in a rut again, but you know, you say Chinese food to people and they immediately think of the one item or the two item combo with fried rice or the godforsaken lo mein, kung pao chicken, barbecue beef, house chicken, the wontons, egg rolls, you know, beef and broccoli. You get the idea? You know, all that same stuff that you're always used to having. So that's what we've kind of become accustomed to thinking what Chinese food is. But it's pretty damn sad, man, because there's a lot of Chinese food that most of us haven't even ever tasted, me included. You know, it's just not that readily available to everybody. Well, thankfully, it's readily available to me because, listen, I'm not knocking your local Chinese joint, okay? I'm not knocking it. I'm not saying anything disparaging about it. That food is fantastic. For what it is, it's great. But Chinese food is the mother of all cooking. And if you dig a lot deeper into the subject of the food, you know, you'll kind of get a better idea and a better understanding of how deeply steeped in history Chinese cuisine actually is. And then when I say it's the mother of all cuisines, I mean, I really mean that. I mean, Italians didn't invent the noodle. The Chinese invented the noodle. And it could start and end there for me, plain and simple. And I think if you think about how deep the roots go into China and how old China is, you kind of see that all cooks have a little bit of Chinese in them. You know, we owe China for a lot of the food that we actually enjoy. Anyway, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but what I initially wanted to do was I wanted to visit Chinatown, and I wanted to have some traditional Chinese food there. But our friend who we were going to go over there with, she couldn't make it. And then one thing led to another on that day. We ended up doing something else. So it'll kind of have to wait for another episode. And believe me, we'll do it, because there's so much to experiment with and to experience with Chinese. So we could do an endless amount of shows on different types of food from China, and it would just be, you know, interesting. So for the time being, we'll just kind of slowly, you know, graze our way through it and have some traditional pork shumai, which is what I thought we'd do today. We're going to have those. We're going to steam them in a bamboo steamer over a wok full of boiling water. And we'll make the authentic pork shumai. Now, I don't know how authentic it is because it's made so many different ways. Traditionally, I guess it's made with pork and chopped mushrooms, but we're going to do it a little bit differently. And you know, it might sound difficult, but it really isn't. It's all in the ingredients. So the key, the hardest thing for you to find, if you want to make this with me, depending on where you are in the United States, is to find wonton wrappers. And we'll get to that later too. And then mirin, which is a rice cooking wine. It's an Asian cooking wine. So if you could find those two things, the mirin's for the sauce, and then the wonton wrappers are actually for the dumplings. If you can find those, the rest of the ingredients are readily available. So it'll be fun. Anyway, like I said, I'm getting ahead of myself, but that's what we're going to talk about today, and we're going to make that. We're going to get back to, you know, actually cooking some stuff, and it should be fun. I wanted to tell you, man, that last show, holy crap, with Sean, yeah, the shit hits the fan again. I tried to be open. I said, look, don't eat lunch while you're not safe for work, not safe for lunch. Be careful. And he's going to get, you know, a little too descriptive, but the first thing out of people's mouths, wow, that was really descriptive. Now, I wasn't expecting that. I didn't see it coming. How could you not see that coming? I told you, you know, it did get a little gross, but you know what? That is where food comes from. Sean is up front center. He's going to tell you how it is. So I saw him last weekend. I'm hoping we can get him back in here for his graduation party, get him hammered and drink a little beer. Speaking of beer, a lot of going on in beer. Stone has released their 2008 Imperial Russian Stout, and they're kind of off kilter. They're releasing everything kind of in a weird way because, you know, they just released a Guardian barley wine not too long ago, and now this is out. And it's, as it turns out, they're going to do their anniversary beer in July. And the reason why, and I found this from my sources, yes, I have sources, the Vertical Epic is, you know, the month, the day, and the year. So this year, it's 08-08-08. That's August. Their anniversary happens in September, so technically, they would be doing a special release in August, then September. So they was decided to do was release the anniversary beer in July. And it's an oatmeal chocolate stout, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm looking forward to that. But their Imperial Russian Stout has been released, and I bought a couple bottles. Haven't tasted it yet, but that's a beer that really could sit around for a couple years. So we'll taste it soon, and put another one away in the cellar. Today, what we're going to enjoy is a beer called Crooked Tree IPA from Dark Horse Brewing in Marshall, Michigan. And it comes courtesy of Groucho at The Beer Report with Groucho and Chud. TheBeerReport.com. They say the beer is actually inspired by a West Coast IPA. Yeah, but it's brewed with, you know, the Michigan way of doing things. And it sounds like my cup of tea because I'm all about West Coast IPAs. If you know me, my two favorites are Stone India Pale Ale and Russian River's Pliny the Elder, which will be available in bottles sometime this year. So I'm looking forward to that. So I want to taste this beer. It's been sitting around forever. Seriously, I've had this thing sitting around. God, when did he send it to me? He sent me two bottles, too, and I'm happy for that because if it's really good, I'm going to drink one, and then I'm going to have another with the Shumai. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't remember when he sent it, but he sent me that, and he sent me an Imperial Stout, which is great because that's sitting around, and he said when he tasted it, it tasted kind of young. So let that age, and we'll have that later on, maybe sometime this summer or the fall or whatever. But I'm going to taste this now. I'm going to open it. It's been cooling all day, and it's time to drink beer. Now, some, you know, people are going to say, well, it's kind of a strong beer to be having with shumai or, you know, a light Asian dish. But I think it's actually a good idea because it's not too heavy, right? And you don't really want a lightweight beer like the typical Asian lager. That it really doesn't bring anything to the table. So I know people like to pair Asian food with Asian beer, but technically, I just don't think Asian beer pairs with much. Listen to this. Yeah, you've never heard that before. It's in a bottle, Dark Horse Brewing in Michigan. Pour it right now. Pours a nice copper color, a little dark, like that. That means it's got some crystal malt or caramel malt in it, most likely. Smells good. Smells like they got that nice piney flavor that I like so much in these IPAs. Nice citrus, too, like lemons. Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect. That's the key. To a good IPA like this, it's got a strong fruity body, not like a really sweet body, but a really nice, heavy, you know, strong kind of a fruity flavor, and it helps balance out the hops, because you can tell it's a hoppy beer, but yeah, the balance here is perfect, and that's exactly what you want to do, and that's why this term West Coast IPA is so popular. This is my style of IPA. I love this. Yeah, I'm really happy. You sent me two bottles. I'm drinking both. Oh, I finished the show first. As all good IPAs are, this Crooked Tree, as it turns out, they say it's dry hopped, which it definitely should be because that's where you get all these flavors when you smell it, the pine and the citrus. Those are really big, and it's really balanced, too. So, you know, some people, they'll use the citrus reference, and it can be anything. It can mean, you know, oranges or limes or grapefruits or whatever. No, it's a dry, crisp taste. So it doesn't hammer you with that. No, the scent's not overwhelming. Hey, Groucho, thanks for sending these, man. When I'm done with this, I'm going to crack the second one and have it for dinner. Yeah, would you hear that? It goes down really smooth, man. It's excellent. How long has it been in there? It's been in the cellar now for, it's got to be going on 8 months, maybe longer. I remember when he sent it to me. Anyway, thebeerreport.com, everybody. And check out all the other fine beer podcasts on beersafari.com. If it's a beer podcast worth a shit, it's on Beer Safari. Beersafari.com. Check it out. It's got everybody on there. Yeah, we're on there. I'm not really even a real beer show, but we're on there. Because everybody's cool. Hey, speaking of Chud, man, you know what? Found out he listens to my show, which is a big deal. That's a big deal. Chud doesn't listen to podcasts. And he's got a great podcast. He's on one of the best podcasts I hear. I can't believe that. he actually doesn't really like to listen to podcasts. And he used to listen to Dude Night, which, you know, it's I'm honored. I'm honored that he listens. I'm honored that he listened to Dude Night, and now I'm honored that he's listening to my show. So, that's great. Anyway, I got a lot of audio to play this time. Not a huddle of news stories. I don't have too many of those, but I do have a lot of audio, so I want to share those with you. And hopefully it's not overkill, but I got so much. I'm content rich right now. I don't know why, but I am. And the first thing I want to share is this guy, Tim Lang. He's a scientist who coined the phrase food miles. It was in the early 90s, I think. Food miles describes the distance that our groceries have to travel to reach us. It's become kind of a broad term now. Everybody uses it, including supermarkets. He began thinking about the food chain and how industrial societies were severing links with the land that produced food. So he kind of acknowledges that the growth in local farms and markets has kind of been beneficial, so it's a good thing that it's caught on. And the video that I pulled audio from, while he's talking, they're showing these images of produce in like an Asian market from all over the world. I don't know where the market is. Maybe it's in London or something. But the prices are just ridiculous. It's like two pears from South Africa were $26. No, they might have been pounds. I don't know. If they were pounds, it's even worse. A couple carrots flown in from New Zealand were $13. A pair of peaches from Argentina, $21. Dude, that's crazy.
The reason I came up with the idea of food miles was because I was increasingly worried, as others like me working in the same area also are, with the globalization of food supplies, the immense investment in transport systems, the way in which food trucks up and down motorways across continents flies quite unnecessarily, and that the restructuring of agriculture is going on, led by retailers. Somehow we've got to get a grip of this. If you're having a local strawberry but it's been grown in a greenhouse, fueled and kept hot in the middle of winter in London, burning fossil fuels, it's going to be, frankly, a very heavy CO2 load compared to a strawberry grown under the sun in Spain and trucked here. The answer is, why eat a strawberry in midwinter anyway? Frankly, one of the things that's got to change is culture has got to change. We've got to be more seasonal. The issue of food miles is becoming more important for one very good reason. The food economy has gone through a major revolution in the last 30 years, and it's been built on cheap oil. And it's been built, secondly, upon globalization, the removal of barriers of trade between countries. And thirdly, developing countries are being asked to export their food products so that rich countries can use them as neo-colonial land. Food miles is a proxy, a shorthand, for energy, for carbon, for fossil fuel use, for unnecessary duplication of production, for exploitation of labor, of other people's land. A whole combination of things is raised by the food miles debate. Actually, what we've got to do is start focusing and asking ourselves, wherever we live, Hong Kong, London, New York, the countryside, in Brazil, doesn't matter where, we've all got to start saying, what sort of food system do we need for the mid-21st century? It can't just be about cheapness, it's got to be also about the environment and health.
I'm telling you, man, the price of food is stupid. All over the world, it's stupid. I think it was Kirk who commented on the blog a while back. He said the Victory Garden is going to make a comeback. I think he's right, man. He's on to something. Water's cheaper than gas. Like he said, you know, what the hell are you doing eating a strawberry out of season anyway? Do you really have to have it? Wait till it's in season. It's cheaper. You can eat it local. That just sucks, man. It's getting so bad. I mean, eggs have gone up. I've noticed the prices of everything has gone up. And I grow my garden every spring, you know, and I do mostly container gardening because I can kind of control the acid in the soil, the ground that I have here in my yard. And even though I've treated it and mulched it, it's just not conducive to actually growing vegetables in it because the pH is all wrong, so I grow in containers. I can't grow that much, but I can grow enough to help myself. But I think it's anyone with a little bit of yard space should consider. And don't forget to shop local, too, you know. There's a lot to be said for shopping local. But, man, that was just disgusting. Like I said, man, if there's one thing I'm going to spend all my money on, it's going to be food. I'm all right with that. It's not a problem. I'd hate to spend more than I have to, but we've relied on cheap oil for so long that this was bound to happen. I can't recall who it was, but one of you posted a link to this now infamous video of these downer cows being mistreated at a slaughterhouse here in Southern California right after I talked on the show about mad cow disease and the slaughter of downer cows. One of you posted a link to this video. Well, as it turns out, that became a major story nationally. And as you well know by now, it's a huge story. It's turned out to be like the biggest meat recall in U.S. history. Well, the president of the meat company, Steve Mendell, he recently went before a congressional panel. And he denied claims that the cows shown on the video were actually processed. You know, he said that those cows had actually just been gone and they'd been killed and they weren't processed. So they showed him video of the cows being led into the processing houses. I was like, oops. As soon as they did that, he had to, like, recant, admit it. He was lying. Oh, gee, I mean, lying.
Testimony you're about to give in this matter is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Under oath, Stephen Mendell of Westland Hallmark Meat said the downer cows seen in the videos, animals too sick or weak to stand on their own, were not put in the food supply and posed no health threat.
The cows shown in the video could not walk, were designated for to be euthanized, and were not put into commerce.
But Mendell had to eat his words when he was shown two videos of downed cattle being sent to slaughter.
Two workers are holding her from behind, twisting her tail, and they continue to shock her as they lead her to the kill box.
So, based upon what we saw, it would be logical to conclude then at least two downer cows went into the nation's food supply, as we did not see a vet make a physical inspection before it was put in the kill box.
That would be logical, yes, sir.
They were illegally slaughtered underneath the rules and regulations of the United States.
Correct.
Okay.
Mendell claimed he had not seen these pieces of video before, although they have been posted on the Humane Society website for weeks. Some committee members found that hard to believe, since the videos triggered the largest meat recall in U.S. history and shut down Mendell's business.
Mendell testified his plant repeatedly passed Department of Agriculture and independent audits, raising broader questions about the safety of the food supply.
Man, the bigger deal that they can make out of this, the better. That's how I see it. Everybody should know that this shit happens all the time at slaughterhouses. There's a right way to go about this, and this isn't it. Seriously. While that was playing, I poured the rest of this beer out, and there's little chunks in the bottom. They're delicious chunks. I think they're hops or something. I don't know. I think I kept the beer for too long. Doesn't matter, though. Still damn good. G-Money coming through. Hey, you'll notice that a lot of the intros on my show feature Andrew Zimmern from his show Bizarre Foods on the Travel Channel. He's a show that he comes on sometimes after Tony's show, or I think now he's on Tuesdays. It's an interesting show. He goes to a lot of places, and he's not afraid to eat anything. I mean, seriously, if he went into a small village deep in the Amazon and the villagers were eating like gorilla shit wrapped in tea leaves, he'd grab a fork and dig in, because he's just not afraid. You gotta respect a guy like that. He's just not afraid to eat what they eat. Anyway, one of the things he does for shock value is he eats the reproductive organs of male animals, which, you know, would be the penis. Now, why I've never seen him eat a pork uterus or female reproductive organs, it's kind of puzzling. But he's eating his fair share of the testicles and penises. Well, anyway, he did a show on China recently. He went into an all-penis restaurant. Seriously, that's all they served were dicks. Even on the menu of the restaurant, they had a drawing of a big wiener on it. It's fucking insane. Anyway, he went in, and he had so many penis references in this segment that I could have made enough intros to last me all year. But because I know the joke's going to get old soon, I decided to play a big chunk of it right here so you can listen to the whole goddamn thing. And just listen to this, man.
The Chinese believe that the penis holds especially concentrated nutritional benefits. There's more than 30 different varieties offered here, from deer and sheep to ox and seal.
Don't look too excited, Joy.
No, I'm really thrilled.
Not.
You are.
I am. Look, there are lots of restaurants in the world that have one or two penis dishes on the menu, but I've never been in a restaurant that specializes in... only. So, you know, how many times are we going to have this opportunity?
Many of the dishes are thought to have specific benefits. Snake penis is supposed to be good for the kidneys. It's served whole as part of a fish soup.
Xie xie. This is snake.
Yeah, for sure. Mmm. I got to tell you.
Yeah?
The snake penis is much softer and less fibrous than I thought it would be.
Mine is bigger, why?
Not at all!
It's much bigger than yours. Oh,
you're right. It's very true. Maybe there's, try the other one. The other one is little. It's very good for your kidneys and for your skin.
I love when he says, it's good for your skin. Yeah, that's what we say that every time. It's good for your skin. Go ahead.
It has bones?
Not really. That's what I was talking about when I said it's a little twiggy. Mm-hmm. There's very small, it's kind of like the way the ears have bones, you know, just very gentle in there.
The penis dishes are cooked to order. Next, we're trying deer penis sliced and fried.
Nice.
Very. The sauce is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The penis is extremely chewy, very chewy. But it almost has a very neutral flavor, like cartilage, like tendon. Mm-hmm. I'll have another bite if you try it. Cheers.
It's good.
Yeah, not bad. You got to work at it. This is very fresh.
Yeah.
It's not gamey at all.
Not bad.
Some of the items are prepared tableside. Our server fills this hot pot with tortoise, seahorse, and herbs. Wow. Then she adds a variety of penises that will cook in just a few minutes.
Enjoy it.
All right. Try the yak penis. Oh, that one is so chewy. And this is just melts in your mouth.
Yak is delicate, tender, and very lean.
I like the yak penis best of all because it actually tastes like something. This tastes almost beefy. I would have thought that it was a steer or bull's penis.
Guo Li Zhuang is unconventional by Western standards, and I'm not convinced these restaurants will be the next food phenomenon to circle the world. But it's a Beijing experience that's not to be missed.
Damn, dude. I mean, Jesus. Well, you know, I got my limits, man. I'm gonna stick an animal's penis in my mouth. There's so many other things to eat. Delicacy? I mean, and that's what everyone says. It's a delicacy. It's not a delicacy, man. It's a dick. There's nothing delicate about that. Anyway, you know, we're playing a lot of audio, and I hope I'm not overdoing it, but I got so much, man. I just want to play it all. So pardon me. One last one, all right? I promise. This is the last one. This is the best one. I saved the best for last. I promise you. And then we'll get to making the shumai. I'm done with this first IPA, and I am wrecked. Holy crap. What was the alcohol content on this, man? It's the first beer I've had today, too, so it hit me in the mouth. I think it's about 6%. It doesn't say. Yeah, whatever it is, it was strong. I may as well just hit myself in the head with a bottle. So I guess the Food Network runs a show now called the FN Dish. What was that supposed to be, like fucking? The fucking dish? The FN Dish? Great. Food Network. The FN Food Network Dish. What, so they're doing like a show... I don't know what this is. It's an online video series for the Food Network, and it's done by Adam Roberts, who's a food blogger. He goes by the name of The Amateur Gourmet. He's got a book and everything. He's back in the kitchen at DeVito's restaurant where they're throwing a party during the South Beach Miami Festival. And all these chefs are there. Mario Batali is there, and Bourdain is there. Everybody's there. So he interviews Anthony Bourdain, and he goes on a total rant on the network. I mean, you ask him what he thinks of the Food Network. What do you expect him to do, right? He's drunk off his ass, too. He's slurring. He's holding his wine glass. I'm sure he's had, like, tons of wine go through it. It's great. It was hilarious. But what I find interesting about the interview is that he actually likes a couple people on it that I didn't expect him to like, and he'll tell you who they are. He says all the things I've already stated about why the network sucks, and then curses like a freaking sailor. Now, you can say foul words, right? Fuck. All right? Now, tell me, how annoying would it be that instead of hearing the word fuck out of my mouth, you heard and then I rubbed a loaf of bread while I'm watching a pretty annoying, right? Well, listen what they're going to do. They're going to edit out real entertainment. Tony provides real entertainment for the network, but they're not worthy of it because they're not the badass Food Network. You know, they're sniveling pussies. They cater to housewives who love Paula Deen and Rachel Ray and Sandra Lee or whoever the fuck. Blow me. Give me some food entertainment. This is what I'm watching. I'm watching Top Chef because it's loaded with swearing. Cook's Curse, that deal with it, all right? It's pirate cooking. This is what we want. We want badasses. That's why Tony got popular. That's why Mario's popular. I've been reading this book called Heat, and it's all about this guy who, Bill Buford, is an amateur chef, a home cook, and he goes to work at at Babbo, Mario's restaurant. He gets schooled. He learns how to become a cook. But man, when you find out that Mario Batali, the nice guy you see on TV, that's not Mario, man. Mario is an animal. The guy does coke. He smokes pot. You know, he drinks a case of wine. He's a foul-mouthed bastard. I mean, he's the real deal. He's a good guy. Kind of guy you'd want to hang out with. A ball buster. And a cheap ball buster at that. But yeah, that's just how it is. Cooks are not what you think. When you think of a cook, it's not Paula Deen or Rachel Ray or Sandra Lee. It's Tony Bourdain. Listen to this.
The arch nemesis of the Food Network, Mr. Anthony Bourdain.
I'm still running on the Food Network, and every minute the Food Network runs my shows, I'm selling books.
Let's talk about the Food Network. Like, let's get in the nitty-gritty.
Yes.
What's your beef overall, if you had to articulate it to the Food Network audience?
You know, aspiring to mediocrity is never a good thing.
Fair enough. Can you be more specific?
You know, let us reach for the stars. You know, Julia Child told us, let us at least learn how to roast a chicken.
Sandra Lee is not doing that.
Velveeta on a Triscuit doth not an hors d'oeuvre make.
But now, reading Roman's blog, I know that you watch Next Food Network Star. How do you reconcile that?
It's sort of like watching... I can't turn away. It's horrifying, but I'm learning something about while I'm watching it. I console myself by saying I really shouldn't be watching this, but I'm learning something very valuable about why I shouldn't.
Okay, let's say this. Let's say Brooke Johnson calls you tomorrow and say, Anthony, I've seen the light. I've listened to everything you've had to say. I want you to come in tomorrow, and I want you to program a new season of shows for us. What would you do? Hard question. See, it's tough.
I don't know how to say never any more explicitly than, you know, it's sort of like hitting a television screen upside the back. Okay. No, that will never happen. B, if it did happen, I would probably behave inappropriately.
Okay. But who's not on the Food Network that should be on the Food Network? Who are some of the chefs that you would love to see with their own shows?
I would like to see Fergus Henderson. What, on Food Network?
Or any network. I'm just saying, what kind of cooking
Who should
shows?
Be on food television?
Yes.
Ah, Dave Pasternak should be on food television, not
Dave Pasternak from Esca. Hi, Dave. How are you? How's
that
it going?
That man, Adam Perry Lang,
right.
Should be on should have a show.
So these are the guys.
Mario should have a show where he's actually unleashed and allowed to speak intelligently and unburden himself of the massive genius that is Mario.
Absolutely. So. If Anthony Bourdain started his own network, this is your lineup. You could
yes.
do it. Yeah. Do you watch any food TV or are you basically?
Yes, of course.
What do you watch?
I watch Ina Garten.
Interesting. So what do you like about Ina?
She actually cooks well. I have no understanding of her alternate universe. I don't want to stay at her house. I think her friends are creepy.
She's surrounded by gay men and her husband's constantly gone.
It seems she may be talking about food, but I don't know whether she's talking about food. But one thing you can be sure of, when Ina Garten cooks mashed potatoes, those are some damn good mashed potatoes.
Did she win your Golden Clog Award?
She did. And, you know, Giada doesn't suck.
Giada doesn't suck? Okay. Kind words.
I hate all her shows. I hate her shows. But she cooks good stuff. Food's good. I'd eat her food any day, and I like her.
She went to cooking school, right? So she knows, she went to cooking school, right?
No, she worked. She worked. She's been in the life.
Cool. So you're not as hardcore in your hatred of the Food Network, perhaps, as some might think, it seems, from some of the shows that you're saying that you watch.
No, I think Sandra Lee should probably, you know.
Thanks so much. This is Anthony Bourdain. Anthony, any final words?
You know...
Break. Not going to make it. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Give me a break. I mean, you guys bleep the crap out of the guy. Let him talk. You know, if you're going to put it online, put it online. What's the big deal? You're not selling advertisements there. And even if you are, what's... All right, here's what Tony said. They can't play it, but here it is. Fuck you, Food Network. Suck on it. All right? One of these days, a food channel for pirate foodies is going to come along. We're all going to be happy, and you're going to die. Until then, we'll continue to hate you. You suck. My dick. That's what he said. All right? So you didn't have to beep him. Thank you. Good night. Fucking Food Network, man. It pisses me off. But I'm glad they're there. Seriously. I'd have no material if it wasn't for Food Network half the time. All right, let's make some food. I'm starving. And being angry and hateful really gets my appetite going. So this recipe I'm going to give you, download it on the website, all right? Because I've listed it out. Trust me, this is so simple. It's all kind of in the technique. You have to be really delicate with these things because there's, you know, they're dumplings and it's a soft dough. So be careful and just follow the recipe. You'll be fine. It's really easy. It makes 20 dumplings at least. It might make more. Just depends on how much you're putting in them. So there's going to be plenty. And trust me, these things are so great and tasty. They go down quickly. And you're going to want to make a lot of these anyway. Download the PDF on the website, zeroface.wordpress.com. Download that, print it, check it out. It's very simple. The key is actually the two things that you really need to get down. If you can't get them, don't make it. Wonton wrappers in the refrigerated section of your supermarket. And then get mirin. It's a sweet Asian cooking wine. You'll need that for the sauce. Now, there's not a lot in the sauce, but it really makes the sauce. If you don't have it, you know, it'll be missing. So look in the international section of your grocery store, or if you're blessed, like I am, an Asian market. All right? Great stuff. You know, I should have named the show Beer Snacks. Wouldn't that have been a great name for a podcast? Beer Snacks. It would just be a show where you made food to go with beer and call it Beer Snacks. I like My Life as a Foodie better because it really is. It's my life. But if there's anybody out there listening who wants to start a new podcast, Beer Snacks. Take it, run with it, do it. It'd be fantastic. Would you pair a beer with a food? You know, and that wasn't my point to do that when I started this. But it's a pretty damn good idea, I think. Anyway, for the dumplings, you're going to need ground pork, some chopped garlic, as chopped as you can get it or mash it. All right, but you'll need some fresh garlic that you're chopped or crushed. And then some fresh ginger, grated really fine. Some salt, cilantro, and mint that you chop really fine. And then the wonton wrappers. And then for the dipping sauce, you'll need some chicken stock, soy sauce, some mirin, as I said, sugar, and then some scallion, which is a green onion. All right, and the first thing you want to do is make the sauce so it's ready when the dumplings are finished. Follow the recipe. Just bring all those ingredients together, bring it to a boil, cover it, turn the heat off, but allow it to stay on the stove so it kind of stays hot and then slowly gets cool. And then just before you're ready to serve it, take the scallions out. The sauce is outstanding. So to make the dumplings, you want to combine the pork, the garlic, the ginger, and the salt, put them in a food processor and pulse it for about 30 seconds, blend it together, and then transfer it to a bowl, add the cilantro and the mint, and then mix it all together. Take your wonton wrappers out on a clean surface, and then put about a tablespoon of the pork filling in the middle of the wonton, and then brush the edges of the skin with water so they're kind of sticky. And then you gather the edges around the lining and bring the whole thing up to the top of the filling mixture. So the filling actually is at the top, and it's like the wonton becomes this big basket. And then give it a little squeeze so the filling is kind of exposed through the top. And then you set those on a tray, cover it with plastic wrap, and then just continue to make the rest of the wontons. Now, here's where the key is. You want to actually steam these. So these need to be steamed. If you don't steam them, it's just not going to be right. You can't fry them. You have to steam them. So if you have a wok or a pot, get the water boiling, and then put a bamboo steamer over the water. And if you don't have a bamboo steamer, you can use whatever you have to steam with, like a net or whatever. This is a key here, too. Put a piece of raw cabbage or a piece of parchment paper over the steamer so the skins don't stick to the steamer. Trust me, it's going to be a big mess. If you go through this much trouble, the skins are going to stick to whatever you're putting the wontons on, all right? If it gets hot, the skins are going to stick to it. So I highly suggest a big piece of cabbage. That's the easiest thing to use, and it's very natural. And it's going to make a real mess if you don't do it. So I would do that and then steam them over the boiling water, cover it, steam it for about 10 minutes. When the skins look translucent and they're really delicate to the touch, that's when they're ready. You take them off, serve it with a dipping sauce, and you are good to go. It's one of the greater Chinese snacks. The dumplings are a staple. They also make buns, which we'll cover at some point, that are kind of like another way of doing a dumpling, but it's like dim sum almost. So it's a little bun that's filled with meat or cabbage or some other vegetable mixtures. And it's very similar to this, but the outer filling is more of like a leavened bread. But these are pork shumai. You can also do this with shrimp. So, you know, you just take the ground pork. You can substitute shrimp or chicken or beef or whatever you want to do. You can make any kind of shumai with this. Just change the main meat, or you can do all vegetable if you'd like. You can do cabbage or anything, you know, whatever you like. It's wide open to interpretation. As I said, the traditional shumai, pork shumai, is pork and mushrooms. But I left mushrooms out on this one, so you can do it however you like. Then install in the technique. Hey, that is it for my life as a foodie. It's been fun. I can't remember when I've had this much fun on the show, actually, by myself, with you. And again, the beer is a fantastic Crooked Tree IPA from Dark Horse Brewing in Michigan. If you guys live in the Midwest or somewhere in the neighborhood of Michigan, look for this. It is a really good interpretation of West Coast IPA. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying my second one right now. Thanks again to Groucho at The Beer Report, thebeerreport.com. Thanks you guys for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time on My Life as a Foodie. Ciao. Mama, Bahama, Mama.